Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we are collectively Groundworks, Inc. We design and build gardens in New York City and the surrounding area. And our show brings the culture to horticulture. So we have a very warm, unseasonably warm spring day today.
Yes.
It's a good day to talk about one of our favorite annual events, Plantarama, which is the premier trade show and symposium for horticultural professionals in the New York City area. It's the 18th year, and this year it's on Tuesday, January 28th or 29th?
28th. Yes.
And we're proud to say that this radio station, the Heritage Radio Network, is the official media sponsor. So we have two guests on the show today, Bob Hyland, who's the organizer, and he will be sharing about Plantarama's history and his new personal adventures out west. He left New York several years ago. He's been a guest on our show a couple of times. And then after the break, we have one of the presenters at Plantarama, a great plantsman named David Culp, writer, and he's going to be speaking at Plantarama and giving us a preview of his lecture, New Directions in Horticulture. So since its inception 18 years ago, Plantarama has been held at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden, and there is one plant that we firmly associate with the garden, the magnolia. So Carmen, tell us more about the magnolia.
Yes, well, we always have the horticultural honor roll every week. Thank you, Joe. And we decided to honor a plant that we associate with the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. In fact, there's a group of magnolias named after the garden. So how did the genus Magnolia get its name? So let's find out. In 1703, Charles Plumier described a flowering tree from the island of Martinique in his genera. He gave the species, known locally as Talauma, the genus name Magnolia, after Pierre Magnol. The English botanist, also William Sherard, who studied botany in Paris under Joseph Piton de Tournefort, was a pupil of Magnol, and he was most probably the first, after Plumier, to adopt the name Magnolia grandiflora. Now, Pierre Magnol was born in 1638. He was a French botanist. He was born in the university town of Montpellier, where he lived and worked for the biggest part of his life. He eventually became professor of botany and director of the Royal Botanic Garden of Montpellier, and even held a seat in the Académie Royale des Sciences de Paris for a short while. Magnol is of lasting importance because he was one of the innovators of the current botanical scheme of classification. He was the first to publish the concept of plant families, as we know them, a sort of more natural classification, which groups of plants with associated common features were described. So he was essentially helping to create the tree of life. Now, if you can imagine, this was a pretty radical idea at the time when most people believed that all life on Earth was sort of created in one fell swoop, and therefore they wouldn't expect species to be related to one another, you know? So he had a really radical idea. And incidentally, that plant from Martinique, the species that Plumier originally named Magnolia, has been renamed a whole bunch of times over the centuries because that's what taxonomists seem to want to do, constantly reorganize and reclassify things as more knowledge becomes available, is now known as Magnolia dodecapitata.
Capitalia?
Dodecapitala. Anyway, yeah. So we honor Magnol today. Thank you. So, Bob.
Our first guest, Bob Hyland.
Are you with us, Bob?
Hi, Alice. How are you?
How are you, Bob?
So
good. I can't believe it was like 3 years ago that we were last on the radio together.
I know, because, yeah, we were talking about the
transition.
Closing
down my nursery, right?
Right, right. And also the transition from, like, how you go about starting a nursery and, you know, different world. So you are now on the West Coast.
I am now in Portland, Oregon. Uh-huh. So I'm a Portlander. I'm in Portlandia.
And that Portland is Brooklyn's sister city, right?
It is. Yeah. I have a neck beard and tattoos, and you know, I've changed my whole persona.
And you only ride a bike, right?
I'd like to post photos of that, Bob. If you'll forward
somehow, Bob, I don't believe you.
So tell us about this big move out west. Tell us about your life now, what you're doing in Portland, and what you're growing.
So I reinvented myself. I mean, it didn't take much of a reinvention, but I'm a garden designer and consultant. You know, I had, with the nursery, I had built quite a clientele of garden clients up in the Hudson Valley.
And Loomis
in
Creek,
fact, I continue
right.
to work with like a half a dozen of those, and I'm back twice a year.
Oh,
you know, continuing projects, and so it keeps me rooted in the Hudson Valley, which I still so love.
Right.
And I'm developing a new client base here, and I formed a partnership with a nursery here.
I saw that.
A nursery that I don't own or, you know, have to water.
That's the best part.
All the plants. And the nursery is called Zero Plants, and they really focus on climate-adapted plants. Dry climate plants that really tolerate Portland's dry summer months. It's hard to imagine. I mean, most people think Portland is constantly rainy, but we have a distinct dry period where there is absolutely no rainfall in July, August, and a good chunk of September most times. And so plants, you know, that are adapted to those drier conditions, you know, and don't require continual irrigation are good.
Right, right. Yeah.
So Zero Plants has been a wholesale operator for about a dozen years, and they are trying their hand at a retail outlet in Portland, closer to, you know, retail customers, and sharing space with them and doing garden design using their palette of plants and also container design, and I'm calling my little piece of the business Contained Exuberance.
Uh-huh.
Great name, Bob. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a name that Margaret Roach and I coined for an exhibit we did for the Berkshire Botanical Garden, like 5 years ago in celebration of their 75th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
I think it's a good name.
Now, you're originally from the West Coast, so this is kind of coming home for you.
Well, you know, no, I'm not, actually. I was born in Brooklyn. I don't know whether you know that, but
what?
I grew up on Long Island and finished high school in New Jersey, so I'm a New York metro boy.
I did not know that, but I thought you grew up, I thought you were from Northern California.
No, you studied there, right, Bob?
I worked in San Francisco at the San Francisco Botanical Garden, used to be called Striving Arboretum, so I spent a chunk of time there.
Okay.
And you know, I don't know. Most people still think of me as a West Coast boy, which I think is kind of cool.
You know why? Because you're so nice and mellow. That's
yes,
why.
Exactly.
I guess. Isn't that it?
And you have that swagger, that West Coast swagger, Bob.
Oh, that swagger.
So what zone are you in now, Bob?
So I traded up 3 hardiness zones from Hudson Valley from 5B to 8B.
Oh, man. I'm jealous.
We may have just actually retested the hardiness zone since we had just like you guys a week ago. Now, what did you tell me? You're in the 50s again today?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And last week you were in
negative
eights. Yeah. It was terrible. Yeah.
Did you guys get
ago, we had one of those Arctic blasts come down through the Pacific Northwest, and we set some record low temperatures. I'm not so sure Portland hit record lows, but down south of us in Eugene, so we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about Metro Hort, so our New York listeners can learn a little about Metro Hort, because you helped found that.
No, actually, no? I'm not one of the founders. I came in like 4 or 5 years after the fact. But okay. Metro Hort Group is an association of horticulture professionals practicing in the New York City tri-state region.
Mm-hmm.
And it was organized back in the late 80s. You know, a group of people headed by the late David Murbach, horticulturist at Rockefeller Center.
Yeah.
Lyndon Miller, yeah. Ken Drews, Lisa Miller, Susan Lissert, names T. Flesher, who's the current president.
Mm-hmm. And Mary Smith.
You know, they
Smith.
Were looking yeah. for a way to sort of network and share resources, and they came up with this concept.
Uh-huh. That was
and
how
so
I got my first job.
Now it's grown into a group of 500 to 600 horticulture professionals who the group sponsors monthly meetings out of the garden season when people aren't, you know, sort of overwrought and busy with their main jobs. And then in late spring and summer, field trips. And then the premier event is Plantarama, the end of January once a year trade show that's been going on for 18 years now.
Right. And they started that when you were the vice president at BBG, right?
Yeah, I was one of the ringleaders. Margaret Roach, who was the garden editor at Martha Stewart Living and now has a very successful garden blog
mm-hmm.
up in Hudson Valley.
Uh-huh.
And Bill Shank. You remember
yeah,
Bill Shank.
Sure. Of course.
Yeah. So the three of us, we clearly, in fact, I just got an email from Bill Shank not too long ago. He remembers clearly sitting around his conference table in his flat in Soho talking about how we, and really we were looking to fill the void when the New York Flower Show, sponsored by the Horticultural Society of New York,
yep.
when it kind of finally just folded, you know, it
yeah.
just couldn't support itself any longer.
Well,
and we were looking for a reason, you know, to have a horticultural event in New York City for hort professionals.
Yeah, I was the executive director at the Hort Society when they canceled the flower show, so I was the one that got to send out all the notices to everybody in New York.
Lucky you, Alan.
That it was canceled.
A lot of anger.
Sure that was a fun job.
That was a long weekend.
Well, at least there wasn't email then, so that,
exactly.
you didn't have to.
You know what
correct,
I did?
Right.
I faxed everybody.
Right.
Anyway, so the Metro Hort Group is a great organization, and I actually remember their very first event at BBG 18 years ago, because
yeah.
Carmen and I were at the Hort Society then, and we, as the Hort Society, we had a little booth.
Yeah.
And it was fabulous. It was great fun. So it's been really awesome to watch the symposium become bigger and bigger and
yeah.
bigger. And
there's been some great speakers over
yeah.
the years. Every year you guys come up with some, I mean, Dan Hinckley, just so many great people.
Right. We've tried to really capture speakers who are either, you know, running, operating, somehow involved in the nursery industry.
Right.
Who are actually growing plants and introducing plants and getting them to marketplace.
Right.
You know, and so we've had Tony Avon and the Dan Hinckley and Roy Clem and Brant Heath and Dale Hendricks from North Creek Nurseries, and, you know, Mike Durr was, you know, here a couple of years ago. So
mm-hmm.
it's been a great list of speakers over the, you know, the 18 years.
Yeah, I still have, like, you know, I have a notebook with all of my notes from the different lectures.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
Because when you're there, you're like fierce, you know,
yeah.
fiercely scribbling, because you always want, you know, after you do this for a number of years, you want new inspiration. You want new ideas, and it comes at a great time of the year when we have some downtime here in the Northeast,
right.
and you can kind of breathe and think and plan and get re-energized for the grueling season ahead, you know, and I think it's really great. And one of the reasons we wanted to have you on the show and to encourage people who don't know about it,
right.
you know, to come. So tell us a little bit about who is allowed to attend. Do they have to be members? Can they come as a guest? Fill us in a little bit on that part.
I mean, the show is really focused towards the Metro Hort Group membership
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, people, gardeners, arborists in the profession, New York City parks and rec,
mm-hmm.
All of the botanical gardens in the five boroughs, all of the greening organizations. So it's really a professional trade show,
mm-hmm.
a very focused professional trade show. The trade show in BBG's Palm House holds about 50 vendors, and it is open to anybody who might come to visit Brooklyn Botanic Garden that day. We don't turn away anybody.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, being staged, you know, and hey, come on in and check it out.
Right.
The symposium piece of it is by pre-registration only because it's a, you know, it's a limited auditorium, and we just try to guarantee, you know, people who really want to come and hear these speakers that they have a seat.
Right.
So that is by it's an online reservation system. And so.
Is there still room? Like, if somebody wants to become a member, let's say a student.
I was just checking this morning, and the morning session, we have a morning session and an afternoon session. They're the same. It's a mirror of each. It's just, you know, you sign up for the morning or the afternoon. And the morning session is nearing capacity at this point. The afternoon, we still have plenty of seats.
Okay, so and it's rain or shine or snow or shine.
Right. It is rain, snow, shine, whatever Mother Nature throws at us that day.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
We're all desperate to get out of our houses anyway, yeah. In our offices.
And I think that's probably the case with all of these big trade shows. I think they go on, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
Well,
you
and
know,
I,
the big show, Dan. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'd like to encourage people to come to this because joining Metro Hort was how I got my first job in New York horticulture. I think it's a so many people. I sent my resume around. I got the membership book and I sent my resume around to like 75 people and that listed themselves as garden designer or landscape architect. And so many people responded favorably. It really is a very generous group of people. And so I think if you're interested at all in horticulture and in urban planting, I think it's a great way to get involved and to learn who's who and see new plants that are coming out and really hear expert speakers.
And the trade show is very doable in an hour. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't, it's not like a trade show that is
at
a
big convention. It's not in a cavernous convention center
And just going to the Botanic Garden in winter is such a pleasure. You know, you're there, you go to the trade show for an hour, and then you could go into the Palm House, you know, or into my favorite, you know, the desert house. You know, I love the dry air and the coolness, you know. It's just
so
really
tell us who some of the exhibitors are.
So we have many of the growers, you know, the wholesale growers out on the, you know, the North and South Fork of Long Island. So, and Mid-Island, Mid-Long Island, too. We've got Atlantic Nurseries. We've got Bartlett Tree Experts. We have Glover Perennials.
Long Island Compost.
We have Landcraft Environments, Beds and Borders, Long Island Compost Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the list goes on.
Right. And then you guys also have some
and the other
planters.
Thing, you know, these, a lot of the, you know, the people running these places, they come to network, too, and they look for employees for the season. This event really jumpstarts the season for so many of us.
Right.
You know, as far as reconnecting or making new connections. And as Alice was talking about, Metro Hort actually runs a jobs hotline, you know, which I think is perhaps one of the most valuable things that it does, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for a job or have jobs to offer, it's just Metro Hort acts as a central clearinghouse.
Yeah, and that's why
the jobs arena.
I think that's why Carmen's idea of pairing Heritage Radio and Plantarama was such a good one because, I mean, these are two very closely connected worlds. I mean, whether you're talking about, you know, the food industry, but also like the growing of the food, and that's become such a hot topic.
And I think the younger sort of generation that wanting to get into urban agriculture, this is a great place for them to start. You know, I don't think they're organized quite yet, Bob. You know, in the New York City era, this is a great way to connect with professional people that
are actually growing food and vegetables and herbs and you know, I mean, there's so much of the industry has moved from design and residential and commercial design into that, you know, it's kind of crossed a bridge into food production, you know, with places like City Harvest and The Grange and, you know, all these rooftop farms that are happening. And I think it's a really interesting combination.
And
it's a really interesting time. And one of the things we're doing at Plant, Ken Drews is leading two panel discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's really trying to give the stage to this, he's calling them next gen, you know,
right.
Next generation of horticulturist and urban agriculturist.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, to give them, let them have a voice and talk about issues and you know, what the future, what they see as the future of horticulture and urban ag in urban areas.
I love that. And that was why we thought it'd be such a good fit. And Alice and I, of course, are going to have a table there for We Dig Plants and Heritage Radio. So you can, you know, if you want to
get some information on some of the other programming that Heritage has.
And hang out with us.
But also so that new, you know, new interested urban agriculturalists can learn, you know, who do I go to have a deck belt? Who's going to do my sprinkler system? Where am I going to get these great plants? Like, what are some nurseries that are going to supply me with what I need? You know, how am I going to learn what I need to learn?
And some of these
on a real tangible platform.
And Long Island is filled with like second, third, fourth generation farmers, Bob. You know that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You know that.
I mean, when I grew up on Long Island in Farmingdale, right on the edge of sort of post World War II development, and the potato fields were right out the back door. I mean, it's like, you know, that has changed.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's not that big of a leap. You know, it's one generation.
No,
so
not at all.
Right.
Well, I think we have to.
Unfortunately, we have to take a break, Bob.
I figured we were probably running.
Yeah, and we have to get ready for David.
So let me just quickly just say that we do have a Facebook. You know, you can check metrohort.org, the website. I'm sure you'll give this information. We have a Facebook event page for Plantarama, and you'll find it at 18th Annual Plantarama. And I'm doing some daily posting of, you know, just throwing pictures up there in short.
Great.
Snippets, call-outs for, you know, what we're doing this year.
Yeah. Well, it'll be great to see you on the 28th.
Likewise.
Have a safe flight out, and I hope it's warm for you.
Yeah.
And keep the temperature warm. I want to see witch hazels and hellebores and, you know, all my friends.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks so much for taking the time.
We'll talk to you soon, Bob. Thank you.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
So stay on the line. We'll be back with We Dig Plants. The second half of the show, we have David Culp, writer and plantsman, talking about new directions in horticulture at Plantarama.
You are listening to Lung by A.G. Dean on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to We Dig Plants. I'm Carmen DeVito, and
Alice Marcus Green.
I thought we'd introduce ourselves again just to keep you guys interested in case you forgot who we were in the past half hour.
Fabulous.
Just think of us, just visualize the ladies from AbFab and you'll get it right. So on this half of the show, we have David Culp, writer and plantsman, talking about new directions in horticulture. Let me tell you a little bit about David. David is the creator of the gardens at Brandywine Cottage in Downington, Pennsylvania. David has been lecturing about gardens nationwide for more than 15 years. His articles have appeared in Martha Stewart Living, Country Living, Fine Gardening, Green Scene, and many other publications. He is a former contributing editor to Horticulture Magazine and served as chairman of the Mid-Atlantic Hardy Plant Society. David is also vice president for Sunny Border Nurseries in Connecticut, and he is the author of the book The Layered Garden, which was published by Timber Press. He's an expert on, and David is a herbaceous perennial instructor at Longwood Gardens in Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. In 2013, The Layered Garden won the coveted Best Overall Book by the Garden Writers of Garden Writers Association. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hi,
good
David.
To be here.
Great.
Hello, hello, ladies.
Hello.
So David is going to be at Plantarama.
Yes.
That's why he's on, to plug his discussion and to learn a little bit about what he does.
Yeah, and David, so we're going to get a sneak peek. If you're listening to the show, you're going to get a preview of the talk. If you can't make it to Plantarama because you live in New Zealand or...
This is the best you're going to get.
Yeah, that's right. You'll have
to... You better leave now.
Yeah.
That's right.
And we've heard David speak before. He's an excellent speaker. He's an engaging speaker. Alice and I have been to millions of trade shows and heard so many people speak, and he's really engaging, and I always learn something every time I hear him speak. So let's talk about the future, shall we? The future of horticulture. Where have we been and where are we going? Specifically, when David and I were talking about what we should talk about and, you know, the main points of his talk later in the month, he mentioned political and historical movements, and that intrigued me and how they sort of affect today's horticulture. Dave, will you elaborate on that a little bit about how politics...
I will say that I am most of all a passionate gardener, and thank you for all your kind comments. When we look at the future, I think that we also have to look at the past. My topic is trends in horticulture, a layered look, and I'm beginning that layer by looking backwards. Few gardens, if any, are made in a vacuum. They're all built on the shoulders of another garden or another movement, if you will.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to begin with a sociological, even somewhat political view of how politics, sociological trends influenced our vision and taste in gardening in the past and how they're shaping our future.
Okay, go. 5 minutes.
A good example. I see in my lifetime. I suppose I might be a boomer. If you look back at history, you find the importance of first ladies, Jackie Kennedy, with her upper-class English look as she decorated, which opened the door for that wave of English gardeners.
Uh-huh.
Right after her came Lady Bird Johnson,
mm-hmm.
which beautify America,
uh-huh.
okay? And her emphasis then on native plants.
Yes.
We're talking late 60s, early 70s, and that whole movement can kind of be traced back to those days. And it's even gained strength. Only have to point to you to Michelle Obama and her initiative of urban gardening, vegetable garden, and what a major influence these public figures have on how we view our gardens in horticulture. We're going to take a look at that.
Great. Are you guys going to talk at all about Downton Abbey and
its influence?
And
maybe in some indirect way, because I'm going to talk about sustainability and how much labor it takes to make a garden.
Well, you
and today's gardeners tend to be crunched for time.
Yeah,
it's true. Well,
not like Downton Abbey.
No. Well, last night's comment.
Right.
Last night they were talking about that Lady Cora was going to be giving a tour of the garden, and then they didn't show it to us. I was pissed.
Well, my dear. They did show green gardens, and I think that's a trend of the future, but we'll talk about that later.
So let's get into the layered garden. What does that mean? You know, why did you title your book that? What does that have to do with...
Other than the political...
Yeah.
Well, it's basically from a gardener's point of view,
mm-hmm.
is how much pleasure you can wring out of one spot. Making multi-season of interest. You know, I think it's only fair to say we have in our gardens what we demand out of them, okay? So we demand multi-season of interest. We create these layers, one succession of bloom, our interest following another. So that's an obvious layer. I'm talking about physical layers, ground layer, herbaceous, tree. Those are layers. I'm talking about emotional layers. I'm talking about historic layers. So it gives a certain depth, I hope, and riches to looking out of the garden. But I think multi-season of interest and relationships of the garden to where they sit are the most important aspects of the layered garden.
So let me ask you, when you approach a new client and you've got a typical foundation planting with a little simple row of impatience in front, what does that say about that person?
Well, first I applaud their, you know, they're trying and they're doing the right thing.
But then don't you want to run screaming?
Maybe we can move a little bit from that place. But obviously they're interested. And, you know, you give me a space, whether it be a wall, a roof, a row of impatience, and I'll try to give you more possibilities of a garden.
Exactly.
I think it's more challenging that way, you know. It would be rather dull if it didn't change much,
Exactly. So let's talk about the trend towards smaller plants and the shrinking of the American lawn, because, you know, we just kind of, you know, transferred topics from, like, you know, the traditional kind of suburban approach to this layered, lush look, you know. So how does that carry forward into the shrinking of the American lawn?
Well, I really applaud that. Because, let's face it, when I look at my lawn, I say, really, you're chemically dependent and you require too much attention. It's time to move on in this relationship, all right? and because, you know, to think of the amount of chemicals one of these perfect golf course lawns take. Mm-hmm. Think about the amount of time. What does that do to our environment, you know, as far as biodiversity, as far as tending it? Ground cover lawn alternatives, I think, are a much better way to go in our plantings. And again, they just happen to look right because they fit into that sense of naturalism, which is very, very strong right now, aesthetic in a gardener's mind.
Right. And, you know, Carmen was talking, we were talking before the show about the renewed interest in geometry and the kind of advantages that you can, you know, you can get a lot of design out of a lawn. It doesn't have to just be this flat green plain.
Yeah, I mean, we don't create a lot of lawns here in the urban environment. Our clients who want a flat plain that their children can play on, we've actually replaced them, David, with turf, you know, which is, I think, a greener alternative. There's no water, there's no pesticides, you know. They don't have to do anything, you know. They're time-starved individuals, and they can have their sort of square patch of space without having to maintain it, while bordering it with lots of lush plantings, you know, so it kind of integrates, you know.
So I love that idea because it's almost like turf as an accent rather than a main feature.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think those two things of geometry or geometric design, contrasted, I call that simultaneous contrast, with a very lush, ebullient planting style, only accents those two parts of your design.
Mm-hmm.
And in urban areas, you've got the added advantage of a very nice hardscape.
Yes.
To give you contrast to those naturalistic planting designs, okay?
And definition.
A wonderful thing to do.
And,
right.
And the definition, you know, having edging and having, I mean, we talked about it a little bit ahead of time, David, about the highline and its influence on design. People want, I can't tell you how many times a season people send us pictures of that and say, do that.
Right.
You know, I want that.
Yeah,
you know?
Do that. I want to echo.
Want to echo that. And that
I have a dark little tiny square in the back of my brownstone.
So then we have to gently, you know, sort of nudge them in the direction of their conditions.
What's going to work.
Know? They're not on a railroad track up in full sun,
right.
You know.
But my dear, it can be in a tree well, all right? Where
right.
you take a native carex.
Yeah.
Underplant that with an appropriate bulb. You're making a layer, but you're not letting the ground sit fallow. Take up a few of those cement, you know,
pavers.
Take a sledgehammer to it and make a planting pocket.
Right.
It's about how green we can make it. I guess my vision for a future city is it coming out of a forest, okay? That would be how I would describe it.
Yeah.
No square inch should remain unplanted, you know, for a lot of different reasons. Environmentally, it makes a lot of sense, not just design-wise as well. You know, the High Line's a wonderful garden. One reason I like it so very much is that I always see people in it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Gardens are for people. And when you see that naturalistic planting in juxtaposition of a very linear space and very controlled with the architecture of the buildings around it, I think the contrast is just amazing. And that harkens back to some French and Belgium, Northern European designs where you have that boxwood hedge, that very hard line,
yes,
and a very loose planting style. Mm-hmm. I think Pete Udolf is a champion. A lot of the new romantics do that. But in New York, you're doing that with hardscape. Mm-hmm. Same thing, only different.
You know, that's a very, you have a very beautiful way of describing, you know, cities and the emergent green that's happening. And I love your analogy about the city coming out of the forest. And especially since cities are becoming so populated again, people are really moving back into urban environments and they're leaving the suburbs. So tell us then what your vision is for the new generation, the new gardening generation, and what do the millennials want in a garden and in their garden plants?
Well, as I travel around the United States, and a lot of it is up and down the 95 corridor, mm-hmm, I always am stopping at garden centers, and I'm starting to see younger gardeners return to garden centers, okay? And that always kind of warms my heart, yeah, as a plantsman and as a gardener.
Mm-hmm.
They are different in the boomers in several aspects. Number one is that they tend to be wanting plants with a purpose, okay? They may be looking for vegetables that they can can or pickle themselves.
That's right.
May
yeah
want to take advantage of that small balcony to put in some vegetables there that they can grow to enhance their own cooking.
Mm-hmm.
They have a real strong sense of sustainable gardens, gardens that are water wise.
Yeah.
You see them looking for rain gardens. You see them, you know, much more environmentally tuned in.
Natives, local.
Back to the lawns, you know, mm-hmm, the lawn substitutes. They're looking for plants that serve a purpose to them. Artemisia to make their own absinthe with, tobacco.
That's right.
Bees on the rooftop.
Okay, yes.
So they have their own honey. That's not only a trend. I think that's our hope for the future.
Yeah.
That we as a species embrace that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it is the biggest group. The millennials are the biggest, you know, in terms of numbers.
Well, they're going to be the consumers.
Like, yeah, they're the biggest the generation that's the biggest right now, the next biggest generation after the boomers. So, and as I was saying to David when we spoke earlier, we have a lot of millennials working for us,
yes,
you know,
we do.
And they always push us.
And they're schooling us.
Yes.
Let's say.
Well, good.
Yeah.
We need to push one another.
Yeah.
We're all, at some point in our lives, kind of gateway gardeners.
Yeah.
We're all looking for something else to do, and we push and share one another. Again, it's that sharing. But I do like their pragmatic, sensible approach to gardening. And sustainable approach to it. It's really heartwarming to see that care of the earth.
Right. It's refreshing.
And
right,
they're bringing technology seamlessly into their experience too, David, right? Aren't they?
Well, it's art and arts and the crafts, okay?
Yeah.
They're embracing the craft, the pragmatic, as well as the art, you know, in gardening. They're kind of just ratcheting it up a bit, if you will.
Right, right. Well, David, I think you've done an amazing job at whetting the appetite, and I can't wait to hear your lecture in situ at Plantarama. And I'm going to run out and get your book. I'm fascinated now to actually read The Layered Garden.
And congratulations, by the way, on winning the award from the Garden Writers Association. It sounds like the cottage is an amazing place.
Yeah, I'd love to come and see the cottage.
Well, come on. We'll sit and have this discussion on the porch and talk about plants as well, because we're even going to wind up with some plants that look forward to our gardens, but we're going to hit yet another layer, the plants themselves.
Okay, David, you have an invitation, and Carmen and I will come and find you at Plantarama.
I'm going to hold you to that.
Okay, good.
I've enjoyed this past few minutes that we've had together and look forward to more.
Good. Well, thank you so much for joining us and for shedding some light on your work. You've been listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. Carmen, you want to wrap up?
Yes. Special thanks go out to our sponsor and our producer, Jack Inslee, and our engineer, Joe G. Please remember to join our Facebook fan page to stay current on our projects and our upcoming shows. And you can win free stuff. We give a prize away every week.
What more can we do?
You know, listen, damn it.
And we'll give you free stuff.
That's right. So I hope to see some of you at Plantarama on the 28th. Thanks for listening. And
come
see
and
you
meet
in
us at our booth.
Yes, we will be there. See you in the garden.
Happy gardening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.